constant to me. So it's time to learn a song. Responsibility. Your dirty clothes need cleaning. Your bed needs to be made. About that time I found out about my happy place. My happy place is laid back. My happy place is fun. My happy place doesn't have any chores or waiting to be done. When I don't want to be here, I go there instead. Anytime, because my happy place is in my head. Boss called me to his office for my annual review. Said I could use a more enthusiastic attitude. It was then that he noticed the blank look on my face. I was already chilling out in my is late. I just take a time out in the break room in my brain. This is a folk guitar solo.
Insulation, keeping out the din. Singer, but he's also very serious and he does some beautiful spiritual music. So that little song by Peter Mayer describes a common human condition. Sometimes when we're confronted with unpleasant facts, we choose to ignore them. We retreat into what is, whether we acknowledge it or not, an imaginary world, a world that is more pleasant and more comfortable than the real world. Has everyone seen the television show Mythbusters? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyone? Yeah. When I was living in the U.S., I watched it all the time. I didn't know whether it was played up here or not, but
Oh, yes. It
was on for like 15 seasons. It ended apparently in March of this year. They're talking already about bringing it back in another form. But in it, Adam Savage and Jamie Hyneman tested common myths using scientific methods, and that usually involved blowing something up or something quite dramatic. But in one episode, Adam Savage quoted an obscure line originally from a 1976 episode of Doctor Who. He said, "I reject your reality and substitute my own." Are you allowed to do that? There are people who say gravity is only a theory after all. Well, Revelation is supposed to be about uncovering the truth. But when you consider the word revelation, it's soon clear that it carries many meanings, and it carries a whole lot of religious baggage. That religious baggage largely traces back to the book of Revelation, the last book in the New Testament, the Christian Bible. That book is also known by a name derived from the Greek, Apocalypse. Apocalypse is the original Greek, and it was just a synonym for Revelation. It had none of the catastrophic end of the world connotation that it now carries. You'll be likely relieved to know that I'm not going to discuss the Apocalypse this morning. The meaning of Revelation that I'm going to pursue this morning is more related to the synonym Epiphany, but again, not in the Christian sense of epiphany, but in its definition as an intuitive grasp of reality, or an illuminating discovery, a realization, or a disclosure. Revelation, then, is about getting an insight into reality, and insight into truth, if I can equate the notions of truth and reality. Our magazine this month, I'm going to plug it a couple of times during the sermon. Our magazine this month contains a quote by James W. Sire. Sire's book, The Universe Next Door, discusses the many different worldviews that exist within human experience. A worldview, according to Sire, is a commitment, a fundamental orientation of the heart. It can be expressed as a story or in a set of presuppositions, assumptions which may be true, partially true, or entirely false, which we hold consciously or unconsciously, consistently or inconsistently, about the basic constitution of reality. Our worldview provides us the foundation on which we build our lives. Sire wrote, "Truth cannot be constructed. To live in ideology is inevitably to live a lie. Truth can only be revealed. We cannot be creators of truth, only receptors of truth." So, perhaps he's right. But while we cannot create the truth, we do create our worldview by choosing what we will accept as truth, bearing in mind that what we accept as truth is often the result of our experience in life. The more committed we are to our worldview, the more selective we are about what we're willing to accept as truth. There are a multitude of worldviews. Does that imply there are a multitude of realities? I think so. Within the mainstream Unitarian Universalism, there's the reality of the theists, of a universe created by God for a purpose, albeit a purpose that's sometimes very hard to discern. And then there's the reality of the humanist, a universe that's not created, that has no purpose beyond that agreed to by human consensus. I suspect that my secular humanist colleagues in ministry would argue that they accept as revelation, that what they accept as revelation meets a higher scientific standard than what my theist colleagues would accept. But the human experience of revelation must also include the emotions, the heart, that still, quiet voice of conscience. Again, Sire talked about worldview as the fundamental orientation of our heart. Author Libba Bray is quoted in this month's magazine. She wrote, "There's an ancient tribal proverb which I heard in India that says, before we can see properly, we must first shed our tears to clear the way." I think there's truth in that quote. A profound and mature worldview requires that we have suffered, either personally or vicariously, through our compassion for others. Revelation in this context is not revelation about the mechanics of the universe, it's rather revelation about what it means to be human. It's revelation about understanding the human experience. This includes all the beauty of love and artistic and technological creativity and compassion and self-sacrifice and athletic perfection and strength and character, along with all the messy parts, All the selfishness, the brutality, the perversion, the destruction, the hatred, the addiction, and the illness. Without the element of human emotions and the experience of the heart, how are we to evaluate the words of Ludwig von Beethoven, who said, "Music is a higher revelation than all of wisdom and philosophy." For many of us, listening to a beautiful music in the right setting reveals something profound that goes beyond words or scientific method. And thank you, Louise, for this morning's musical revelation. How are we to account for the variety of worldviews that exist? Some of us were at a loss to explain the size of the popular vote for the Conservative Party in the last election. I mean, really at a loss. How could anyone support the party of Stephen Harper, let alone a third of Canadians? Well, a TED talk by psychologist Jonathan Haidt that is referenced in your magazine this month puts forth an interesting hypothesis that might just be a revelation. I found the TED talk particularly provocative, and I recommend that you listen to it for yourself. Unitarian Universalism holds that the celebration of diversity is one of our most important principles. We use terms like inherent worth and dignity of every person, acceptance of one another, free and responsible search for truth and meaning, right of conscience, goal of world community. And yet there is a problematic lack of diversity in our worldviews represented in our congregations. Professor Haidt could have been talking to an assembly of Unitarian Universalists when he spoke to a room full mostly of self-identified liberals. He asked people in the audience to raise their hand if they felt themselves to be liberal or conservative. This was a TED talk talking about advanced technology and design. And as you might anticipate, a lot of the people there were liberals. And they're united in trying to find a way to use technology and design to make a better world. He said, "If our goal is to understand the world, to seek a deeper meaning, to get a better grasp on reality, then our lack of moral diversity is going to make it harder." And he was talking to the group that attend these TED sessions. He said, "Because when people all share common values, all share the same morals, they become a team. And once you engage in the psychology of teams, it shuts down open-minded thinking." In other words, if we're really free thinkers, if we're really interested in changing the world, then we must be open to revelations that challenge our own worldview. And that's best done by respectfully including diverse voices in our discussions. Professor Haidt's research leads him to believe that before birth, human brains are programmed to learn 5 major categories of moral values. This is part of the evolutionary process that got us to where we are. The idea of being born with a blank slate is now largely discounted, that children do come into the world with certain pre-programming. So he said that we're programmed to learn 5 major categories of moral values that will enhance the survival of the developing human. He says these moral values are the result of our evolutionary history, and that they are 1, an inherent desire to care for other people and to reduce harm that other people may endure. 2 is the idea of fairness and reciprocity in human relations. 3 is in-group loyalty or tribalism, a predisposition to favor your own group. 4 is respect for authority. And 1 is purity or sanctity, purity most often related to sexual or food taboos. His hypothesis is that these values are inherent in human nature. His studies indicate that the first 2 moral values, the reduction of harm to others and fairness and reciprocity, are values that are highly rated among liberals. But that liberals reject the idea of in-group loyalty, deference to authority, and preserving purity and sanctity, at least reject them as moral values. His data indicates that liberals are primarily guided by the first two moral values, care for others and fairness. And conservatives, on the other hand, are guided by these two values, along with the moral values of in-group loyalty, respect for authority, and moral purity or sanctity. At the risk of looking like a university professor, I'm going to put a slide up.
Not the clearest possible slide. Across the bottom, we transition from very liberal to very conservative. And this study has been done and replicated over and over in a number of different countries and nations. He had data specifically for Canada, which looked very much like this. And then strongly endorse at the top and strongly reject at the bottom. So you'll see that the ideas of care and fairness, relatively stable but slightly declining in their relative importance as you go from being liberal to conservative. On the other hand, this idea of loyalty and authority and sanctity being moral values increased dramatically as your outlook is more, your worldview is more conservative. And it seems a fair conclusion that the very conservative seems to rate these five things when they're making decisions, where liberals would tend to be rating just the two.
So now that I say these words, I can hear myself arguing with them. I mean, liberals are right to discount the ideas of in-group loyalty, for that's the basis of racial prejudice and blind patriotism. And respect for authority is the basis for preserving historical structures and powers that are not based in justice. And moral purity is the basis for shaming the natural range of human sexuality and keeping women in their place. All true when taken to the extreme. However, they can be viewed a little more sympathetically. And that's the revelation that I'm trying to work towards. Viewed a little more sympathetically, we might be willing to accept that our actions in the real world need to be guided by more than a desire to prevent harm and a desire to have fairness and reciprocity in human relations. The three additional moral values contribute to a necessary discipline in the order of human society. The truth is, the reality of human social structures is that we also need in-group loyalty. Humankind makes progress when we identify as a team, to be that a country, a political party, or a neighborhood, etc. We need that cohesiveness that teamwork can build. Promoting group loyalty in the right context is a value that leads to human progress, and it's there for evolutionary purposes. We also need a certain degree of respect for authority. Human society can collapse in a hurry into chaos without a respect for authority. Following the excesses of the French Revolution, Edmund Burke famously said, "The restraints on men, as well as their liberties, are to be reckoned among their rights." And we need some restraint on our basic carnal drives. All human societies have had sexual and moral taboos that evolved to protect children and other vulnerable people, to prevent unwanted pregnancies, to promote strong communities, to support the nurturing of our children. By discounting these values of in-group loyalty, respect for authority, and moral purity, we're excluding the worldview of half the human population, the half of the world's population that has a conservative worldview. We're choosing our own reality. We're ignoring the revelation. Our ability to see the real situation, to seek workable solutions, to grapple with the reality of the world, and ultimately to grow spiritually, depends on a revelation of the human values as they truly exist. If you want to change the world and to find workable solutions to a problem, we must take into account the broad spectrum of moral values. We cannot do that in a church community where we all think alike and are dominated by two of five moral values that guide humanity. The ideal is a balance among these five moral values. Not that every individual should give these values equal weight, but that a group of people seriously grappling with the messy world of reality needs to have all of these values represented. Represented and respectfully listened to within the group. So my message to you this morning is that we do in fact choose our own revelations. As a predominantly liberal group, we consistently evaluate what is right in the world based on the care for the needy and a sense of fairness, both of which are good things. But problematic if we stop there and fail to include criteria for recognizing the need for human loyalty and respect for authority and shame and punishment as essential parts of the structures of human society. If we fail to take these into account, the world will just not make sense to us. We will have disengaged from the world as it is and retreated to our happy place, a place of comfort, but ultimately an ineffective place. So let's never stop expanding our circle of inclusion. May we respect the inherent worth and dignity of the conservative worldview. And may we find the courage to be open to uncomfortable revelations. May it be so.